If you have your Bibles, I invite you to turn to John chapter 1. A few years ago, Garrison Keillor, the writer and the radio show host of Prairie Home Companion, did a reading, or actually a recitation, about the birth of Jesus at Bethel University. Bethel is a Christian college, and his rendition and reflection upon the birth of Jesus was rather astounding. The people that were there heard him with rapt attention. And it was obvious that Keillor, who had grown up in Minnesota and had his reputation made as a story writer about Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, knew the story he was telling. It was obvious that he had grown up in a Christian home. It was obvious he dealt with the subject matter with a great deal of sensitivity. And he talked about the birth of Jesus and how God entered the world through the body of a woman. He explained how awkward it must have been for Joseph as he tried to lend assistance to his wife. He found himself there alone with his wife in this stable, having to help her give birth, and he knew nothing about that. He thought, if it were making tables, I could have done that, but this is beyond me. But as he assists his wife, Keillor pointed out that in that time, most likely, Mary would have squatted to give birth on this filthy floor, and as Joseph took the baby, he cleaned it off as best he could, and then he laid it on Mary's breast. As Keillor came to the end of the story, he said, I suppose for those who believe it, there is nothing more important in all of history than that. And then he paused for a moment. That the truth of what John said was true in the birth of Jesus. That as he was born in Bethlehem, he was largely overlooked by the people who should have paid the most attention. You know the story from Matthew. He records the visit of the Magi, those Gentile astronomers who came to Jerusalem. They'd followed the star from the east, and they followed it as far as Jerusalem, and they wanted to know the one who was born the King of the Jews. So they decide if they want to know about the birth of a king, they should go to a king, and they visit King Herod. Including the teachers of the law, the Jewish leaders, the very ones who knew where the Messiah was to be born. It's interesting that these Jewish leaders didn't bother to get up and make the 6-mile trip from Jerusalem down to Bethlehem to see the birth of the Messiah. It's rather odd that these who were the leaders were the ones who had no interest, wrote the last of the prophecies of our people. 400 long years, and we'd heard nothing about him. And I think that sometimes people are too literalistic about their understanding. No, it didn't make sense to me. Why should we be concerned now after all this time? Besides, in Malachi's prophecy, he said that the Elijah would come first, and there was no sign of Elijah on the horizon for them. They had their excuses, they had their reasons. I think the best reason was that what John said to us. He came into his own, and his own did not receive him. There are always going to be those people who are religious, people who have been raised in church, who know the stories, who should be seeking the one the stories are about. But they don't have much interest. The good news is that while there are those who have little interest, there are those who do show interest. There are people to whom the friends with
the very people who didn't care the
birth of Jesus. But that sentiment seemed to pervade among the Sanhedrin. Now, Nicodemus was a man who had seen enough about Jesus that he was curious. And he knew enough about his friends on the Sanhedrin that he knew that if he went openly to see Jesus, his life would be in trouble. Certainly his standing in the Jewish circles would be in jeopardy. And so John tells us that Nicodemus went to see Jesus at night. As Nicodemus encountered Jesus, his encounter was different than the attitude of the members of the Sanhedrin when Jesus was born. Though many who served on the Sanhedrin in Nicodemus' day had the same attitude, Nicodemus, a Jewish man, had real interest. We don't know exactly all that transpired, but John chapter 3 tells us the account. It tells us that Nicodemus went to see Jesus at night. He was afraid of his friends in high places, and so he went secretly to Jesus. We discover that within Nicodemus, there was a darkness in his own soul that needed to be illuminated. So Nicodemus went to Jesus. And as Nicodemus thought about his encounter with Jesus, he was interested in having a religious discussion. He meets with Jesus, and he starts out by basically complimenting Jesus. But just as Nicodemus thought that he had things under control, Jesus said, "Nicodemus, you have to be born again." Nicodemus tried to understand what that was all about. What did Jesus mean when he said you had to be born again? No one ever talked like that. And he's thinking, as an old man, older man, how could he climb into his mother's womb and be born a second time? And Jesus said, "No, you were born the first time. You have to be born a second time. The first time you were born with the water of physical birth, but now you have to be born spiritually. And unless a person is born spiritually, they cannot have a relationship with God." Nicodemus really didn't understand it. And Jesus confronted him and said, "How can you be a teacher of God's people and not understand that?" It was all new to Nicodemus. All he knew was that he had spent his life jumping through all the religious hoops. As a Pharisee, he was moral, he was devout, he did things that were right. But as a man who was honest with himself, he knew that for what he did outwardly, he still wrestled with who he was inwardly. So when Jesus said, "Nicodemus, you have to be born again," though he didn't understand it, somehow some of that made sense. And Jesus said that God loved the world so much that he gave his son, that whoever believes in him had something to do with the body of Jesus and laid it in the tomb. He had become a follower of Jesus. He came to realize that he came into his own, and his own did not receive him. John said, "But as many as receive him, to those he gave the right to become children of God, even to those who believe on his name." That was true for somebody like Nicodemus. Even though his friends had all their religious excuses for not believing, they had their own confidence in their own efforts. When Nicodemus understood, it wasn't on his own. It was what Jesus did for him. And it's not just the religious people that got caught up with Jesus. There are those people who we might have dismissed maybe because we thought, okay, some of the religious people had just been inoculated against the real thing and they weren't interested in
in Jesus. But there were those who you looked at their lives and you think, they've made such a mess of their lives. There's not a whole lot of hope for them. There was a woman, in fact, I think John links Nicodemus in chapter 3 with this woman that we encounter in John chapter 4, who, unlike Nicodemus, who had his spiritual life seemingly together, she was a woman who didn't have her life together. Nicodemus was a Jew and a Jewish leader, and he knew the teachings of the Jews. This woman wasn't even a Jew, she was a Samaritan. We find her story. Great, 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 great grandmother, Rebecca. You know Rebecca of Rebecca and Isaac? That's about as close as she ever got to being being godly, was her name. Because she wasn't a person that you would ever think as being a very devout, religious person. I mean, after all, she wasn't a Jew. She was like the rest of us. She was a Samaritan. And we kind of had a... Death no longer has mastery over him. The death he died to sin once for all. But the life he lives to God. Mixed religion. It had elements of Judaism, but to us, that was... that. Becca wasn't exactly sure where this was going or what was happening. She said, look, I don't understand all this, but I know that someday soon the Messiah is going to come. And when he comes, he's going to set the record straight. And that's when Jesus said, I who speak to you am he. And she realized that Jesus knew about her sins of her soul, knew her at her worst, and still talked to her. Knew her at her worst and still cared about her. Knew her at her worst and still involved himself with her. And she didn't know what to do, but at that moment, Jesus' disciples came back, and they were all hung up on the fact that Jesus was talking to a Samaritan woman, and she just left. And she went into town and she started telling everybody, there's an amazing man. You've got to come meet him. He knows all about me. He knows all to them. It's surprising sometimes those who don't believe in him. It can be even more surprising those who do. I don't really know why somebody like Garrison Keillor, so familiar with the story, decided it wasn't for him. But I'm not surprised by that. It's been clear from the beginning that there are those who are closest to it who are not going to believe it. Just who might believe in him if we're faithful in sharing that good news?